Hey everyone, this is yet another strange episode of The Deadpan. I'm your host, Jack Mangan. I'm not going to do that. This is episode number 34, and it's actually, after I'm done with this short little weird intro babble, we're going to just replay the very first real Deadpan episode, which was number 2, and had Mike Nelson of Mystery Science Theater as the guest, so you can hear the show in really in its infancy. A couple of things we have to do right now, though, before we kick in to the replay. First, I have to say thank you very much to everyone who's contributed content, and also definitely to everyone who's been generous and contributed money through the PayPal link on the site. That's been a huge help. I mean, you know, I've had a rough year with full of struggles, but it's just been a huge help, and I appreciate it. Speaking of struggles, gotta give a shout out to my main man Joe Murphy. He could definitely use your positive vibes and your good karma and your prayers and whatever you're willing to send his way. For more information, if you haven't heard, then go to michaelandevo.com, scroll down a little bit, and he'll explain it more in depth. All right, the matter of business I wanted to get to is can't have a week go by without a Greasy Spoon comment run. So there are three for this week. I'll just read them very quickly in the order that they were rolled and determined over a few days. First one was from Ed from Texas. The post is Thanksgiving week. Minuses dash work sucks, traffic sucks. Pluses dash only 3 days to survive, and then I get to hang out with my parents. Oops. Then I get to hang out and my parents' house and graze for the rest of the week. I think I'll find a way to survive. The next post, ditto. I think that's three for ditto. Ditto's taking a commanding lead. The post is, no problem, I'll just whip up a few entertaining posts. Smiley face. The third, appropriately enough, Jeremy from Seattle, and appropriately his comment is, ditto sloppy secondies, star ew tilde o. All right, so there we have the Greasy Spoon comments. I'm going to end this intro babble, and we're going to get right into what was Deadpan episode number 2, is now being rerun in episode 34. And next week, I have tons of content. Actually, that's one more piece of business. I have tons of content for next week. But keep it coming. You can either call it into the voicemail. It's 206-350-TOMI, 206-350-8664. Or send it to me in an email, jack@jackmangan.com. If you don't hear your stuff, I mean, I've had stuff waiting for quite a while now from some people. So if you don't hear your stuff, then absolutely feel free to send me a line. Get in touch with me. Just remind me about your content. I might not have forgotten, but I may have misplaced it. The past few weeks have been among the craziest I've ever gone through. So I definitely don't want to leave anyone hanging or have anyone feel unintentionally snubbed. And this wasn't funny at all. So we'll curse, because cursing's always funny. Fuck. There, that was hilarious. Alright, thanks for being Deadpanites. You guys rock. And thanks for putting up with this 4 minutes of complete intro babble. Now on with the show. Well, the old show. And next week, on with the new show.
It's evil!
It's the best of podcasts, it's the worst of podcasts. It's Jack Mangan's Deadpan. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. Jack's evil double from an alternate dimension. Yes, with a goatee. Thanks to all of my listeners, readers, and friends for tuning in. And thanks to all of the Misties and Mike Nelson fans for tuning in. His interview starts at 5 minutes, 7 seconds, if you want to skip ahead. Otherwise, I hope you'll listen and be entertained. This episode is chock full of quality, as opposed to the first one. Coming up right after that interview with Mike Nelson is a special exhibition, Duel of the Fates.
Oh my God. What happened to the pants? They're all dead. The pants are dead. I'm stuck with dead pants. Can anybody help me? Jack Mangan, can you help me? Deadpan. Deadpan Podcast. Host Jack Mankin. Yeah.
Thanks, Mark Foreman, for all the great contributions to my podcast. Check out his show at bbluesman.com. While I'm at it, let me say big thanks to my peeps, Mike, Evo, Summer, and Joe at the Dragon Page for believing in me and helping to launch me, my writing, and my show. I mean, my novel, Spherical Tomy, is a cue in their drinking game. On to the deadpan. Up first, I have an unrelated thought. If I were to drive a motorcycle, I'd really want to make sure my head was protected. So I wouldn't wear a standard motorcycle helmet, but something much bigger. Rather than a half inch of plastic and foam between my noggin and the street, I'd want 3 solid feet of padding in every direction. That's right. My head would be covered with a hemisphere of protection as wide as a car. My big-ass helmet would take up the entire lane on the street or highway. Think about it. You could take this even further. Install mirrors on that big thing. Wire it up for a sound system. Blinkers. DVD player. AC and heater. Xbox, cell phone, etc. Just be a huge dome cruising down the street on top of my bike. You just gotta be careful going through narrow tunnels and stuff like that. You could call it, that's right, the Spherical Domey. Hey, if you see this implemented elsewhere, remember that you heard it here first.
The following takes place between It Was a Dark and Stormy Night and What Would Happen Next, Only Time Will Tell. This is Bauer.
Jack, this is CTU. Where are you? We need you in the field.
I can't. I am in the middle of a severe plot twist.
Jack, what are you talking about?
What I am talking about is my daily word count, my goals in character development, and my possibilities in getting published.
Jack, your country needs you. You should be in the field.
No, I should be writing. Just like Myra Lafferty tells me on her podcast. She gives writing tips, personal anecdotes, and even features published authors in interviews. It's a totally Airwolf podcast.
Jack, you can't be...
Hold on. My position has been compromised. Repeat, my position has been compromised.
We'll send back...
No! Send me an editor!
Jack, you're pinned down. You should be returning fire.
No! I should be listening to Myra's podcast! I should be writing! Time is short. Subscribe to Myra Lafferty's I Should Be Writing at ishouldbewriting.com. Your life and the fate of the free world may depend on it.
Ah, it's the stolen rap hip-hop lines music. Since I'm recording this episode solo, I guess I've got to read them. So here goes from MC 32-year-old white guy, a line from KRS-One's masterpiece, MCs Act Like They Don't Know. Some MCs don't like the KRS, but they must respect him, because they know this kid gets all up and they wrecked him, slapping and selecting him, checking him, disrespecting him, just decking him, decking him, decking him. Buy the original track on CD or on iTunes to hear how it should sound. That song is full of brilliant sequences, just like that one. Hold on, here's T. Morris again.
Hello. This is T. Morris of Podiobooks.com, the survival guide to writing fantasy, and podcasting for dummies. You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Yay.
And now, finally, for the Mike Nelson interview by my alter ego, the stammering nervous buffoon.
Okay, and we're rolling. And hello, everyone. This is Jack Mangan. We are listening to the Jack Mangan Deadpan Podcast, and we have an amazing interview. We're in total disbelief here today. We have Mike Nelson, famous of the Mystery Science Theater 3000 television show. Hello, Mike.
Hey, how are you, Jack?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I am doing wonderful.
That's great news. How is it? Now, you're in Minneapolis, right?
I am, yeah. We are freshly blanketed with several feet of snow.
So you never went Hollywood?
No, I never did. The occasional foray where you kind of come in like a commando, and before they know you're there, you get out. I've done that. But as far as living there, I don't think it's in the cards.
Okay. So you're a happy Midwesterner then?
Well, there is this point, and every Midwesterner goes through it every year, and it's kind of like, childbirth, where you forget the winter before and you just think this lovely summers are what it's going to be like all year round. And then it's January and your car won't start and your fingers are literally frozen, and you say, what the hell am I doing living here? There's planes from the airport every day that go to warm spots. But somehow we're just never smart enough to actually get up and leave.
Now, you and the rest of the guys are all – that was always the center for Mystery Science Theater. I mean, the whole Best Brains crew was all based out of Minneapolis. Is that right?
Yeah, we were ensconced in a little – it was kind of a industrial space in a suburb called Eden Prairie, which was neither Eden nor Prairie. But it was a great hideout because executives, you know, they found their way there once – and then they never returned. It was just something a little too. It just didn't smack of Hollywood, you know. It was near the Minnesota Vikings training camp, and then there were some places that were kind of like packing contact lenses off to the other side of us. So it was an odd spot.
So I've noticed that was always the vibe, and I noticed you've said that. I think you were quoted. I'm going to paraphrase. You said one time about, you know, the goal was to never become too famous, and that was the key to your success. And it's kind of reverberating what you're saying right here. Like, it seems like you and the rest of the guys all kind of resisted that whole, you know, glamorized Hollywood stuff.
Yeah, I think it actually would have made the show impossible to do because if you lived in Hollywood and did that, you would be seeing the people you were making fun of at parties. And that's just, that would make for a really uncomfortable life. So that was part of it. And also, it really was protected from the... you know, to some extent from the executives, because it was just harder to meddle. They couldn't just walk into the studio and jingle their keys and, you know, announce a couple changes they wanted to the show and leave. It was much more difficult than that, and so they didn't bother.
Right, right. And now, you know, I'm not going to ask you about specific episodes here and there, you know, and drive you completely up the wall, but I did have, since you mentioned that about, you know, you can avoid contact with the people that you're making fun of. I recently watched the Time Chasers DVD, and you told a funny story at the beginning of that. Can you want to relate that story again here?
Was that the one about them watching the show?
Yeah. You
had
said something like in the beginning of the DVD, you came on and said, you know, these people were really thrilled that we were going to do their show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. We had a, when they sold the film to the distributor who, you know, sold it to us. And mm-hmm. So they were aware of the transaction. And so one of the guys who was in the movie was excited about it because he had watched Mystery Science, and he was kind of thrilled to, you know, it'd be fun to see his film get the treatment. I don't think many of them were professional actors, and
no,
this was kind of a lark for them. So this was going to be fun. And so we had a little conference call with him and just said, well, we're really enjoying the film, and I think you're going to, you know, I think you'll have fun. And so they threw a party for the premiere of it. And then we talked to the guy after that, and it was clear it just didn't go over that well. I don't know. They just weren't thinking ahead that we were actually going to be making fun of the film and, you know, directly poking fun at features on their face and everything. And so he seemed a little more muted and depressed after that. And there was one guy in particular who we edited completely out of the film, and he was even more depressed.
Oh, jeez.
Didn't appear at all.
Now, are there other good stories about that where the people involved with the film contacted you, or you got feedback, or you heard their response?
There was a few. I think one of the early ones was Miles O'Keefe, who was of a Bo Derek Tarzan fame. We did a film of his. And he was sort of this hang gliding caveman and sword and sandal kind of a thing.
Okay.
And he called from Southern California, where it sounded like he was just by the pool, you know, cracking his first beer of the day at 11 o'clock. And, hey, I caught that show. I loved it. So that was kind of the first contact that we had. And we were pretty thrilled by that.
Wow.
And most of them were, obviously, they were negative. And you usually heard them secondhand because... you know, if you're being made fun of, you don't usually call up the person that's making fun of you. You usually complain to someone else. So there wasn't a lot of direct contact, but now and again we'd hear about it through someone else.
Now, Mystery Science Theater was on for all the 90s and, you know, into the 2000s, and it was a huge, you know, it was a huge part of a lot of people's lives. You know, the fans you know, being a fan myself, I know that it was just a huge thing for all of us. So it has a great history. There's no present at the moment. And here's the question I want to know and everyone wants to know. Is there any future for Mystery Science Theater?
I don't think so. No. I wish it were the case that it were. It was a lot of fun to do, and I still work with Kevin Murphy and Bill Corbett, who are on the show, and we do great stuff together, and I love working with them. But it's too sort of legally complicated, and too many people, you know, own little bits of it, and it's too... So I really don't think that it's realistic that it would ever come back.
Wow, okay. So tell us then, for Mike Nelson then, I mean, we know some of your past. I mean, you can feel free to plug other cool stuff that may have gone under the radar because we were all watching Mystery Science Theater. But tell us, I guess, you know, Mike Nelson's past, present, and future, you know, the highlights of what to look out for.
Well, I've been working a lot of different kinds of writing, and I've been doing some DVD commentaries. I'll mention those because it's probably one of the closest things to Mystery Science. There's a company that does great colorization re-releases of films, and they also put out these pristine black and white copies with them. One of the beauties of DVD, you can make the choice, and then you have me with my commentary on it, which is it's kind of a hybrid Mystery Science comment. There's jokes and then a little bit of true material on there. But I've done about six of those now. House on a Haunted Hill and Plan 9 from Outer Space and Carnival of Souls. And I just completed Little Shop of Horrors.
Okay.
So that one should be out soon. And you can check that out at legendfilms.net is one place to get it. And I think some of them are available on Amazon and I think in some stores. But it's more of a specialty item, so I wouldn't expect it to be on the end bracket at Target, but you can find it.
Yeah, I've seen that on your site. But now also you've got the Three Stooges that you did was not the same type of thing. What you did for the Three Stooges DVD, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, we just did some intros. We being the film crew, it's a little entity I formed with Kevin and Bill. We had done some stuff for National Public Radio, and then we have been working on some DVDs ourselves with commentary and kind of a new fiction. And those don't have a release date yet, but hopefully we'll be able to announce something about that soon. But the Three Stooges spot was just some wacky intros to some of the Three Stooges shorts, and they've been redone in color. Which is kind of cool to see the choices that they made. Like, I did not know that Curly was African American, so that was sort of weird. No, that's not true. But they did have to make some choices on, like, why is Curly's jacket, you know, yellow checked? It's just sort of an interesting thing to watch that, and I think they do very tasteful choices on all those things.
Okay. yeah, I think actually Mo was the one who was African American, though. I don't right. It wasn't Curly.
Okay.
Gotcha. So but now you're also, like, you talked about your books. Plenty of time to plug your books on my show here. But before, how do you identify yourself? I mean, do you think of yourself as a TV personality or a DVD personality or an author or a writer?
It's kind of weird. I realize that my whole thing, I think I'm the only person in the country that does what I do, which is to just sort of be Michael J. Nelson, for what it's worth. So
no,
I know
another guy who does that, don't you?
Is there someone horning in on my business? Is it like Gallagher, where he's got his brother at Gallagher 2?
Well, that's because you were smashing fruit, though. That was the problem.
That's right.
Sorry, no, I'm going.
Now you've got me on the Gallagher track. It's neither. It's kind of all of those things. Like, I just did some... I did some writing and acting, well, not acting, hosting for the Stars and Encore networks. So that's a hybrid. They say, can you write your own intro, these sort of funny intros to movies, and then can you host those? So I do that as well as writing the books, and then I do some, some screenplay fixing and sell screenplays and do a little bit of radio, and occasionally, very, very rarely, I do some advertising copy, but really only for specialty things where they sort of seek me out and say, you know, I want you to write the kind of stuff you write. So yeah, it's kind of all those things, which keeps it interesting, and it's also, frankly, it's good to diversify as well. You know, you don't want to just be Gilligan and that's all you do. You know, you want to hang out a shingle that says I could do a lot of different things.
Right. You also have to be the professor and Marianne sometimes.
Oh, I'd like to be Marianne.
So
I'm actually dressed as her right now. You can't see that, of course, but.
Oh, really? Well, let's talk a little bit more about that. So tell us now, I meant to ask you about Death Threat, and I want to say, are you going to be another, is there another novel in the works or in the future?
Well, Death Threat was a little bit disappointing because I had done a 3-book contract with HarperCollins, and in the middle of it, as is often the case, your editor leaves. And he's kind of the one who brought you on board and brought you along and dragged you through this giant place. And then when he's gone, you're suddenly adrift. And that's kind of what happened with Death Rat. And I think there was another editor there who took over who reads my writing and goes, huh? I don't get it at all. So by the time Death Rat came out, that's who I was living under, that editor. And he frankly found me to just be the most confusing, like, why would anyone read you? So the book just sort of was contractually released, and I ended up selling a bunch on my website, and was happy that and got good reactions and good reviews, but it is disappointing to labor so long on something. So I haven't gone back to it just for that reason, that you know, it's a lot of work up front, and then the end of it is somewhat unsure. You just don't know if it's going to be mishandled and if they're, you know, even going to like it, or
right.
They just sort of stare at it and wad it up and throw it away. So it's tough to do that kind of work and, you know, not know how it's going to turn out.
Sure, sure. But, I mean, did you feel like, so you felt like it was a good experience? Did you enjoy the whole process of, I mean, I guess that was another venture for you, something that you hadn't touched on before. Did you enjoy the whole thing of creating this fictional, you know, story?
Yeah, I really did. It was an idea I kind of had for a while, and working on it, I kind of plotted it out very very minutely. I knew what was going to happen, did all the notes on that. So the actual writing of it was, now I can just kind of write prose that I think is funny and hopefully provide at least a couple of laughs every page, and that's my challenge in life, and that's what I love doing. It's just, you know, I'm just here to amuse, and that's what I try to do. So, but it is difficult because when you're writing with a group, you know instantly if something's funny or whether you should slink away in shame and never speak again. But when you're writing by yourself, you know, you don't sit and laugh at your own jokes, so you're only guessing, and that's a little strange.
Yeah.
So you put a great cost on that, handing it to another human being and then sort of watching their face and going, I hope that's going to work. So it's a different experience.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And the slinking away is a lot tougher, you know, when you've written a whole book full of stuff that you need to slink away.
Yeah, exactly. You've spent a long time on this, and if it just, you know, it just falls on deaf ears, it's a lot tougher than just making one joke that bombs.
People obviously think you're funny, so I wouldn't, you know, you can't really let one person who doesn't get it, you know, discourage you. Obviously, you know, with all the long career, I mean, you were part of, I think some people don't realize that you were part of things, you know, Mystery Science Theater from just about the beginning, right? Or was it from the absolute beginning?
Not from the absolute beginning. They had done a few shows locally and then sort of packaged those up and sold them to Comedy Central, I believe. No, Comedy Channel it was in those days.
Okay.
And so I came aboard right at that point.
Okay. So now, I guess to switch back to just how busy you are with all the stuff that you're always doing, now, you're a family guy, too. I mean, how do you tend to maintain the balance?
I actually have an office in my home, and so it's pretty easy, and I've got a kind of a my writing style is that I can sit and write something while my kids are fighting in my own office, which is often the case. So I'm just lucky that way. Distractions and whatnot don't bother me. So I'm kind of here in the morning when my kids leave from leave for school, and I'm home in the evening when they get here. And then I travel sort of not too frequently, but that I think that provides for my family a nice way to get me out of the house, frankly.
But they sometimes say, like, okay, you know, isn't it time for another trip? Isn't it time for another business trip?
Dad, I think you got an invite to visit Alaska for a while. Why don't you go?
Well, I can tell you, though, the podcasting thing is a little bit different when the kids are all screaming and fighting and the dogs.
Yeah, I imagine that doesn't work as well.
I guess my next question would be, you know, if I said, let's plug one thing right now, what would you plug?
Well, you know what? I have books out. There's a series of books that I did it's called the Pop Ink series. And if you look on Amazon, and they are in a lot of stores, and they're in gift stores, too. Mm-hmm. Really fun read and really great artwork in these books. One of them is called Happy Kitty Bunny Pony. And another is Goth Icky, sort of gothic theme. And then Love Sick was kind of a Valentine's Day book, a little twisted look at Valentine's Day. And it's my commentary over this kind of really cool-looking art that I worked with this company on. So it's a series of books, and I've been getting a lot of good feedback. People really have fun with them, so you could look out for those.
All right. Well, yeah, and best of luck with all of this stuff. I guess I don't. You know, I'm so new at this interviewing thing. I don't even have my stock question. You know, like James Lipton asks your favorite curse words and all that stuff.
Right. Right.
I'm still so new at this. I don't even have that. So actually, well, what is your favorite curse word?
Nobody will probably believe this. I don't curse.
I used to
when I played tennis. I used to curse. It's true. And I had just the foulest. It was like it was a little invocation almost when I would miss a shot. It was under my breath, but it was just the foul thing. And I realized one day, this is not healthy. This is just horrible.
It was like McEnroe was saying, calm down, Mike. It's all right.
Yeah, exactly. Which, by the way, he was the master. I also realized that I wasn't even coming close to his artistry, which was, I don't know if you could get HBO to watch Wimbledon, and HBO didn't. They stayed on during the breaks, and you could hear McEnroe swearing at the line judges, and it was the highlight of Wimbledon. It was just, he knew that he was off in most of the countries that it was being played, and so he would just stand and berate the line judges who would stare straight ahead. And but anyway, I digress. So I don't curse.
Okay, well, that's a
hard to believe. I've never smoked marijuana either. There's another geeky confession of mine.
Well, these are all good things, and neither one is actually that surprising. I hope that doesn't offend you that I say that, but I'm actually not that surprised by either of these little revelations.
Well, believe it or not, once I think I was telling one of the other writers on Mystery Science was remarking that I seemed fairly, you know, sort of clean cut, like I was pretty square, and it sort of surprised me. I thought, gee, I think I'm pretty rock and roll, man. and his it was Paul Chaplin, actually. His face, it just told the whole story. Okay, I guess I'm not then.
Well, I guess, you know, I'm sorry to tell you this. And I hope you're not offended, but you did convey a little bit of the Boy Scout thing, you know, over the TV. And hello, you didn't hang up, did you? I hope you're not offended by that.
Damn. See, I swore. No, I realize that. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm Danish. I was raised in the Midwest and never lived anywhere else. So what can I say?
So all right. Well, here is what I'm going to try out as a stock question, okay? And let me know if you think it's okay. And it's actually, you're a great person to ask this for. But do you have any guilty pleasures?
Yeah, I do. I like to listen to sort of cheesy European shoegazing music while I work. You know, that kind of dreamy baby-voiced girl singers over droning electronica. I can't even name any of them. It just makes me sort of, it puts me in a mood to write, this kind of tranquil mood. So I'm a little bit ashamed of that, because normally my tastes are fairly, you know, I Dvorak and Beethoven are my favorites, but
okay.
But that's what I go to when I'm writing a lot.
Okay. Well, Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. You have carte blanche. Whenever you want to make a podcast appearance, then you please contact me, and you're always welcome to come on. And thank you so much. It's been an honor to talk to you and to have you on Jack Mangan's Deadpan.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I'll take you up on that.
Thanks. And everyone go out and check out Mike Nelson's books. It's Abrams is the publisher, you said, right?
That's right. And I kind of keep my news on my website, MichaelJNelson.com.
Okay. And thanks for all the years of great jokes and, you know, and hilarious evenings, and for teaching us all to have fun with the movies, Mike.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you, Jack.
So that was the Mike Nelson interview, and that was a lot of fun to do. We recorded it on Skype, and I'm not really sure what the weird sound effects were behind his speech. It sounded like a bunch of computers, you know, as if he were on a satellite out in deep space, rubbing my chin.
Spherical Tomy by Jack Mangan.
Distant explosions dotted incessantly across the screen of stars.
The samurai is dead. Tomy was once one of the foremost combat programmers in the universe. Now her time is running out. She occupies a deteriorating clone body on the satellite, right in the middle of a conflict between warlords. One, her former shogun. The other, the murderer of her samurai. Spherical Tomy is an action-packed tale of deception, revenge, redemption, fragmented identity, and the limitations of the human and artificial mind. Subscribe at patiobooks.com. See what made Spherical Tomy the number one patio book.
Tomitsu, is it really you in there?
In the flesh.
Oi, you pants wankers. It's time for Duel of the Fates. This segment takes two spec-fic characters and pits them head-to-head in five silly categories. In honor of Mike J. Nelson, this exhibition duel is based upon a terrible, cheesy movie, The Worst I Can Find. Alien vs. Predator vs. the Audience, which was still somehow better than Alien Resurrection. I have seen every great minute of Alien and or Predator films. I've also seen every terrible minute of Alien and or Predator films. I've never read one panel of the many AVP comic books, so I can't dip into that material. Sorry if you're a fan of those. Alien vs. Predator.
Let's rock! Yeah!
On to the first category. Who has the best look? Okay, the Predator does get extra points for channeling Dr. Frank N. Furter with his fishnets. He also gets a nod for those pressurized dreadlocks. But come on. The Predator is...
one ugly motherfucker.
H.R. Giger's aliens are works of art, whether their heads are smooth or bumpy. Say, what does H.R. stand for anyway? Hellraiser? Half-ripped? Hick redneck? Hermaphrodite rival? Heinous reviler? Home run? Higglytown repairman? Harold Ramis? Horny Republican? Hysterical Ravings? Hard Richard? Happy Reveler? Hollywood ri- Next question, love prowess.
That predator did seem to be getting a bit cozy with Sanaa Lathan, the unfortunate attractive lead actress in AVP. But those aliens, you know you've got to watch out for the quiet ones. After all, somebody has to be fertilizing the queen for her to lay all those eggs, right? They never lack for lubricant, and they have two mouths. Think of the possibilities. Not to mention that little facehugger alien thingy plants quite a kiss. Reminds me of this guy back in... anyways, and maybe the alien in the original film wasn't just a remorseless, unstoppable killing organism. Maybe it just wanted to see Sigourney Weaver in her panties.
Thank you, Vasquez. Category 3, who'd win in a fight? Apparently it's a pretty even matchup. I'd be inclined to say that the aliens are superior, but the Predators can certainly hold their own, and they have the skull trophies to prove it. Which is a bit dramatic and disgusting if you really want to think a minute on his hobby there. Let's consider who it took to vanquish the Predators. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Murtaugh from Lethal Weapon. The aliens keep getting beaten by Sigourney Weaver. Who's scarier? Well, now that I think about it, did you see her buzz cut in Alien 3, a.k.a. Alien Cubed? Number 4, the rotating category. Who'd have created the higher body count on Gilligan's Island? Either way, monster movie formula dictates that Skipper, the Howells, and Ginger all meet grisly ends, due at least in part to Gilligan's bumbling. Really, Marianne is the only guaranteed survivor, whether it be alien or predator set loose. It's likely you'd see the professor and Gilligan getting the predator's gruesome dissection treatment, or getting all cocooned up, saying, "Kill me," with the laugh track going the whole time. I think the alien and predator would probably both clean up in equal numbers. Perhaps the better question we should ask is this. Who would fare better against the Harlem Globetrotters or a team of evil robots in coconut basketball? Fifth and final category, intangibles. There's an NHL hockey team called the Nashville Predators. Nashville is where Sun Records first recorded Johnny Cash's music. Later in life, Johnny Cash recorded a cover of a Nine Inch Nails song called Hurt. And of course, an infant alien creature burst forth out of John Hurt's stomach, ruining the spaghetti dinner for everyone.
Hello, my baby! Hello, my honey! Hello, my ragtime gal!
Okay, so the five categories are finished, and who won? Was somebody keeping track? Shouldn't somebody be paying attention here? Well, anyway, here's the tiebreaker. Who'd do better with Mike, Joel, and the bots with the cheesy movies on the Satellite of Love? Well, neither one of these guys is any stranger to terrible movies. But since the alien creature can't actually, you know, speak, and don't even talk to me about that ridiculous scene in Alien Resurrection, I don't think he can contribute much. At least the Predator can parrot the stuff that Tom Servo is saying. So does that make the Predator the winner of this duel? Even though we were all rooting for the alien? I guess so.
Game over, man! It's game over!
I still don't get the ridiculous subterranean pyramid in Antarctica, but that's neither here nor there. Well, thanks for listening. I've been Jack Mangan. Back now to, well, me. Push the button, Frank. Plug time. What do I want to plug this week? Well, of course, the Spherical Tomy Patio book and ebook, which will soon actually be out in a print chapbook version. So if it's not already, just check my blogs. Check either of my sites, either jackmangan.blogspot.com or just www.jackmangan.com, and I'll announce there as soon as it's released. My short story, the Unsolvable Death Trap, was in Interzone. My short story, 16 Pieces at a Time, it took third place in the SF Reader 2005 Short Fiction Contest and should be out now at www.sfreader.com. Thank you for listening to the Jack Mangan Deadpan Podcast. In the weeks ahead, I'll have interviews with John Buccigross of ESPN, Scott Sigler, author of Earthcore, and T. Morris, who you've already heard plenty of times during this podcast. I'm going to leave you with a promo from the lovely and talented Karen from California, who you already heard doing the guest appearance in Love Prowess in Duel of the Fates, and also with some original music, which actually was recorded at the Draco Vista Studios. It's an instrumental piece called Love is Never Distant. It's original by me.
Hey, everybody. Seeing as how I got your attention now, poor Pastor Kavanaugh is still recovering from his run-in with that very varmint we aim to hunt down today. We have to catch him before this happens to some other poor innocent citizen. Boys, bring the pastor up.
Woo!
Well, you can see for yourselves what this evil desperado is capable of. As secretary of this here town, I deputize all of you listening to go out and find Deadpan Jack Mangan and bring him to justice. He can usually be found around that Far Point Media place, so you just go down there to the Central Cortex, sign on, and make sure you go and listen to his podcast very carefully. There's a reward of 500 credits for the person who finds his whereabouts. Now, who's brave enough to go out and ride with me?
I am no coward, no way, no how, no way gonna be right now, no way Dallawagon Bando, and I'm gonna wind a cowpoke and under a stick and bend a dagger biscuit cutter.
Okay, folks, we're counting on you. Come on, Gabby, let's go.
That'll do, Pig. That'll do. Tune in to the next episode for the interview with T. Morris and more silliness. Okay, there's going to be a few seconds of silence after this, but then this one's over.
The preceding program is part of the Farpoint Media family of podcasts. To find out more about Farpoint Media and the many other podcasts available, visit www.farpointmedia.net. A world of audio wonder awaits you there.